Hey, everybody, welcome to Shop Talk Show. This week's show is sponsored by Harvest, time tracking and billing, web software for really anybody in client services, and Environments for Humans, who have some upcoming events that are going to be super rad, one of them being In Control in Hawaii that runs back-to-back with the CSS DevConf, and we have some interesting news there. We'll tell you about that later in the show. For now, let's kick it off.
Hello, and welcome to episode 25, the silver anniversary episode of the Shop Talk Show. I'm Dave Rupert, and with me is co-host and Kickstarter famous Chris Coyle.
Hey, guys. And with us, with me and Dave, we have this week on Shop Talk Show, Mr. Simple Bits himself. Thank you for joining us, Dan Cederholm.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for having me.
Those are real horns.
Yeah, I've got a little, Mexican band, behind me. They're going to play some tunes as we play. So,
I was wondering about the intro. Is that Chris and Dave playing? Is that you guys?
We're going to get there.
For some reason, I pictured both of you guys like playing along.
We should have made banjos mandatory for this episode. That would have for a planning committee. But oh well,
that would have been good.
Anyway,
we're a 2.0 season of the show. We're gonna record our own. Come hell or high water.
Awesome.
So Dan Cederholm is a man who does not need introduction, but some of your highlights, Dan, are the Simple Bits blog, really awesome big time sites, some books, and of course, dribblebubble.com.
That's right. Yes.
Yeah, and books and stuff, right? Like, that's how I originally knew Dan. It's like, because he had Bulletproof Web Design, which everybody in the world read, because it was just this really, like, down-to-earth, clear guide about CSS. And then you followed it up with, dare I say, even better. Well, it's two things that came out pretty close to each other, right? The Handcrafted CSS and then a book about
CSS.
So those were pretty near each other, weren't they?
They were, yeah. I got into a good groove there. Writing books, I enjoy it. It's fun. After getting the first one out of the way, I sort of got attached to the process, and which might sound kind of weird.
You're the opposite of that. They're like, oh, I got one out, and I'm never doing it again.
Right. No, I sort of got hooked on it because I don't know. I like the organization. I'm kind of a non-organized person otherwise, so. Having deadlines and, the old sort of constraints make good work thing. I found like a book process is like all about process and deadlines and keeping you on track. And I sort of need that. So I think that's kind of why I liked it. And as long as you space them out enough so that you forget how much work it is, then it's okay. Then you can do more than one. You can do another book
Yeah, so it's just interesting because you don't blog as much anymore, right? But you crank out more books than you ever have. So do you kind of like that like long form thing a little more than the quick hits?
Yeah, I do. That and sort of putting together talks have kind of taken the place of blogging for me anyway. And blogging in general, back in a long time ago, right? 6 years, 7 years, 8 years. Blogs were kind of the way everybody communicated in the community. It was like the only way, pretty much. And now that's been replaced by, or somewhat replaced anyway, by different social networks like Twitter and Facebook and all that stuff. Yeah. And, you know, that makes it a lot quicker and easier to communicate with people. Whereas before it was like, you know, blogs and comments and blogs, and there was definitely, you know, it was easier to digest that way. Probably it's a little less frantic. And, but anyway, so a lot of people have, you know, toned down the blogging, or in some cases not, but I just sort of made a conscious effort to put more, in terms of writing and stuff, put more effort into to long form stuff like books and yeah, presentations and stuff.
Oh, I'm sure that will pan out. It has.
yeah, it's really interesting because your books, Dan, are still the books like I'll recommend if somebody's like, hey, do you know a good CSS book or something like that? And so I guess five for the quality of the work you've done. So,
oh man. Oh, I appreciate that. That's awesome. Yeah. In some ways I feel, a little behind right now, to be honest. Like, you know, things are moving so fast, and, I mean, that's exciting too. It's a real exciting time. But in terms of CSS stuff, it's hard. It's hard to keep up with how quickly things are moving, you know, I don't know. I feel a little overwhelmed by it a little bit. Oh, cool. There's a question.
Kind of. That's just as I think in regards to that. So we'll get to that in a minute. Just kind of that, like, wow, things are moving fast kind of thing.
Yeah. Yep.
Oh, Dave, do you have a?
Well, so I don't have a hilarious question to open with. But I'm still working. I'm working on material. I'm saving it for season two. But I wanted to say, at Idiot on Twitter, he reached out to us. And if you go to his blog website, visualidiot.com, super spectacular. I mean, each one, he's got this, I guess it's 23 little pages on this site, and each one's a gem. So yeah. I'm not going to, no spoilers, but there's one on how to get a dribble invite. So there you go.
Yes. Anyhow, I remember this one. I think I've seen this one. Yes.
I recommend this website. This is instead of a hilarious opener from me, this is what you get. So
awesome.
Hopefully that'll work out for you guys. But So the next thing we got to cover is, of course,
hashtag
all the hottest hot drama that we have here around the internet. And this week has been quite a hot drama week. man, where
it's
do we
been
start?
Good. Sometimes it's a little slow in hot drama, but not this week. So one of the big ones is Net Magazine, who I've, you know, been a part of, written several articles for. I was interviewed in it not so long ago. Really kind of generally regarded as kind of the best of the print publications in the web industry. Also has a blog that you can follow too, right? Which is a good move for them, you know, to kind of have an online presence that isn't just subscribed to our magazine, but also has some content on it. Published an article about JavaScript performance, and it was kind of like some tips and stuff to be better at it. And you know, like at the second it was published, it was full of like syntax errors and stuff that just wasn't true, and you know, just general kind of is this guy for real? Why did he write this? And so Rebecca Murphy, who we all loved, you know, I hate to preface all this stuff. I should get better at this hot drama thing. She wrote
we should have a general rule. We like all these people. It's just they get tangled up in hot drama. So these are all people we love and respect. There's just tangles of hot drama, and it gets us all eventually.
She wrote up this gist and she said, what's wrong with NetMag's Optimize Your JavaScript Post? And it's just epic. It's just, literally, if we counted them, probably 10 to 15 things that are just like, this is wrong, and this is why, this is wrong, and this is why. And it generated this huge comment thread of, of the hot drama wasn't that the article was bad and that she wrote this. It's just that people thought, oh, she should have taken it a little easier on this guy. Like, nah, how does this guy feel? Could he even sleep at night after he gets jousted with this pole of, you know, from somebody who's probably a little more well regarded than she is? Then just today, Oliver Lindberg, who's the editor of Net Magazine, responds and he's like, God, I hate doing this stuff in public, but I feel like, you know, I can't just say nothing kind of thing. God, I'm trying to find it. Yeah, here it is. He's just kind of says, look, we aren't trying to publish misinformation, obviously. And in order to stop that, a lot of times we ask people like you, Rebecca, to review these posts, have some kind of critical review of them. And just the way it is, this happens to me sometimes too. I don't have time to review an article like that. It's a little bit of kind of, it's a little thankless work, you know, like just for the good of the industry, read this big long article and check every line of code in it. I don't have any desire to do that. And a lot of people say no, what Oliver says in here. As such, he needs to kind of reach, and it feels weird to say this, sort of reach down the totem pole a little farther and get people that are a little newbier to do that kind of work. And thus the, you know, chicken or the egg, you know, I don't know. That's the hot drama. Did I do it justice?
Yeah, you did.
I think you did.
Good.
Yeah. That was fantastic.
Anyway, so I don't know. We'll have to get Rebecca on here, which we're working on. I think she's already booked up, actually, but I'm playing with the dates a little bit so we can talk directly with her about it. But I don't know. Was she too abrasive in the tone of this thing? I don't know.
Dan, did you see that?
I didn't see. It rings a bell, but I didn't read Rebecca's correction, so I don't know. I can't comment on the tone of it, but I tech reviewing is important, right? So. You know, especially for a publication like Net Magazine, I think that, you know, it's not just someone's blog experimenting, right? So I think they have to be careful about that.
Exactly. That's why it feels weird for them to respond and just be like, sorry, we tried to get it reviewed, but nobody good would do it, so we just published it anyway. That seems a little, like, lame.
That doesn't sound like a good excuse, to be honest. I mean, they're a for-profit publication. You know, tech reviewing it should be part of every technical article they do. I mean, that's just, I think. You're going to lose integrity if you publish stuff that's not checked over, you know, and then you've got people taking it for real and then, you know, publishing bad code out there. So,
And, you know, how she handled it, I guess that's up to every other person. I happen to know she's a very nice person, and maybe we'll see how she feels, you know, days later about her. Does she care that she might have hurt this guy's feelings? Should we be worried about feelings when we're talking about the industry?
Good question. It can get personal pretty quick, right? But, you know, it sounds like she, having not read it again, I can't comment on the tone, but it sounds like she did a service by sort of correcting, you know, what was wrong. That's for free.
Cool.
Yeah.
Oh, one of the hot dramas that came up. We'll let this one rest. Is the it feels like beating a red horse. Literally, honestly, I can't. I will walk away from you if you start talking to me about, oh, let's talk about IE6 and old IE sucks. You know, it's just the lamest conversation these days. I don't like people that bring it up and talk. You know, like, I know it's a little relevant still and it affects our lives a little bit, but I'm just so bored of talking about IE. I can't even live. But there was a Smashing Mag article, Lewis Lazarus, who we've talked about on the show before, has a great blog called, Lewis, how am I blanking this? I look at your blog like every day, impressivewebs.com. And he wrote a magazine article for Smashing Magazine that said, that was like, old browsers are holding the web back. And then the drama was, there was like a good follow-up Nicholas Sackis article that was just like, really, are we still talking about this? And who are you even talking to anymore? Like, is this just preaching to the choir stuff, which Lewis did mention in his article. He realizes it's a little preaching to the choir. What was the drama exactly, Dave?
So yeah, I think it was just this you know, tome of an article about how bad IE is, and you know, it's just saying, oh, this is really crappy, it's bad, therefore, and it's sort of the deal was, who is it written for? It's on Smashing Magazine. No, like, users like gonna like go here and read a 1200 word article that's like, oh, now I'm totally convinced, you know, now I can upgrade right. my browser. It's like, people who have IE6 just can't upgrade the browser. And I think it is just this like IE is a punching bag, and it's a cliche. It's like, you know, speaker goes on stage, speaker tells IE6 joke, crowd laughs and chuckles, and then speaker like drops mic and says peace out. So
I'm guilty of that. Guilty as charged.
Well, Dan.
It's been a while.
I'm fine if it's like clever or something like that.
No. Stick to your guns, man. Okay. You're right. Absolutely right. It is a punching bag. But yeah, I think at this point in 2012, that's the right year, right? Yes. 2012, we can get past that because you're right, again, about IE6 being, a lot of people don't have a choice if they're on IE6. You know, there's a reason for it. Either they don't care, or they're stuck on it because of their internet or whatever. And for us, I think, web design community builders to be sort of arguing about it, it's a waste of time, really, right? I mean, we can talk about how it's holding things back to a certain extent, but yeah, I'll cut the jokes out. It's cool.
No, I feel like if you have a clever joke, I love those. Like somebody hadn't, I want to hear, say I heard an ad event listener joke recently, or did we tell that one? But then there's also like, I think Paul Irish wrote a post on all the things that IE8 can't do and why it should be, you know, kind of degraded or, yeah. And so in stuff like that, I really appreciate it. It's just like, well, here is exactly where IE8 is falling short. So these are talking points on right. how we can solve those problems or yep. how we yep. can ignore them. So mm-hmm. rather than just being like, lol, it's old. we can just like, I don't know.
Yeah, I agree.
What is that? Where you're like racist against old people? What is that? Is that generophobic? Yeah.
But I think that's when you hate everything.
Ageism.
Oh,
yeah.
Ageism. There you go. Mm. Anyway.
That's good. I have a few quick follow-ups, and then we're going to dig into questions, which is really the good part of this show, isn't it? But one of our listeners, Dan Miner, wrote in a quote that I thought I would read aloud because I thought it was so good. It was one of the episodes where we talk about inspiration, which we talk about regularly on this show. It's kind of an elusive thing sometimes for people. So this is what Dan Miner said. The quote is by Chuck Close, and I think he does like really photorealistic paintings. I should have looked. That's my memory of what Chuck Close does. this is what he says. The advice I like to give young artists, or really anybody who will listen to me, is not to wait around for inspiration. Inspiration is for amateurs. The rest of us will just show up and get to work. If you wait around for the clouds to part and a bolt of lightning to strike you in the brain, you're not going to do an awful lot of work. All the best ideas come out of process. They come out of the work itself. Things occur to you. If you sit around trying to dream up a great idea, you can sit there a long time before anything happens. But if you just get to work, something will occur to you, and something else will occur to you, and something else that you reject will push you in another direction. Inspiration is absolutely unnecessary and somehow deceptive. You feel like you need this great idea before you can get down to work, and I find that's almost never the case. Cool quote.
Wow.
Okay, and then the other follow-up is that we mentioned this guy wrote in about making Google Maps squishy width, but also squishy height, you know, like Uncle Dave's old padded box, or the intrinsic ratio, so the aspect ratio of Google Maps would stay the same in a flexible width environment. And Dave figured it out, so I'll put a link in the show notes.
Awesome. Nice work, Dave.
Oh, it's nothing. It's nothing. It was tricky. It was a little tricky, but got it done.
Did you have inspiration for that, or did you start working on it?
Well, I
get it.
I think I just – that was good. All right. Hey, hold on. I got something for that. Hold on.
Hey, there you go. Love it.
Nailed it. All right. Well, Chris, do we have anything else here?
No, let's get into questions. We got Dan here. We got to talk about stuff. So we're going to do a few questions. I feel like the whole middle chunk of this will be like the super dribble Q&A hour because we have lots of questions about that. So we'll get there, folks. Just stay on the line, as it were. Let's open up. Do you want to read one off here by Jordan Moore?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I got it here. It's from Jordan Moore. He writes in, I find myself in a lucky position where clients are becoming more and more intrigued by responsive web design. A lot of them come to me with existing websites that need adapted to become responsive. What challenges did you find yourself up against when making an existing site like Dribbble responsive? What's your approach? Let's start with Dan. Yeah.
He's got an existing site. He's trying to retrofit some.
Yeah,
and I think that you're in, right?
Yeah, absolutely. We, you know, we had an existing site that, you know, was fixed width and a lot of fixed width media in it, images. And so, you know, you could take two paths, I think. One is like throw everything away and build from the ground up responsive, or take an adaptive approach, which is kind of what we did with Dribbble. Where at least the you know, small screen devices are handled. It's not truly responsive in that, you know, it's not a fluid layout or a fluid grid, but it's still optimized for small screens. And that worked pretty well for us because you know, essentially just chipping away at overriding those styles to fit everything in a smaller screen. It was fun. It was a fun little challenge. I mean, it's not ideal, right? I mean, in the ideal world, we'd throw everything away and start over. But when you have, you know, subscriptions and advertising, and you have all these things you're trying to do during the day, it would be impossible for us as a tiny team to throw it all away and start over. So an adaptive approach, I think, is a good one for, you know, at least getting your feet wet with responsive stuff and media queries and sort of answering those questions about what happens to these interface patterns when you change the width of the site. How do you handle, you know, wide things and wide navigation and all that kind of stuff. So it's a good way to start, I think, going adaptive.
Yeah. So adaptive is kind of like, instead of thinking 100% percentages and all that, just kind of toss a media query in kind of at a certain breakpoint and be like, apply some new styles based on that. Yep.
Exactly. Yep.
Lovely. Okay, Jordan. Hopefully that's useful. Maybe don't throw out the baby with the bathwater or whatever. I'm not even sure if I used that correctly, but
To come back to his question, I mean, you know, things that were helpful to keep in mind for us was, you know, try not to just hide everything. You know, it's kind of that's kind of the easy way out. Like, oh, I'll just hide this navigation and because I don't know what to do with it when it's smaller. And you sort of have to try to avoid that, which is difficult when you're taking a, you know, an existing fixed width site and retrofitting it. But you know, you don't just want to hide it. It's still going to be loaded and there are bandwidth concerns there and all that stuff. So that's kind of a no-no, but I mean, I think just choosing a media query that's, you know, roughly smaller, I guess. we chose 500 just so that, you know, whatever device at that point would get a fluid layout at that point, actually. And that way we're not specifically targeting like the iPhone, for instance. We're just targeting all small handhelds, which I think is another good thing to keep in mind, that those iPhone dimensions, sometimes they come up in articles and things, that those are the go-to breakpoints where You know, those could change. Who knows? And they probably will change at some point. But so, you know, look at your content and see where the breakpoints make the most sense based on that. I think that's another good good thing to keep in mind.
I like that you just picked some kind of arbitrary thing. I feel like a lot of people are doing that lately. In a new design I'm working on, I'm using named media queries, right? So there's like a I can just apply a name to the query instead of naming it something like, you know, iPad or whatever. That's just so arbitrary. Right. I just went with Goldilocks style, and I'm naming them Papa Bear, Mama Bear, Baby Bear.
Oh,
Goldilocks for the really small one. Because, yeah, it just doesn't matter. It's totally arbitrary.
That's perfect. Now, are you using like a preprocessor to fill those in? Or?
Yeah, because otherwise you can't really name a media query. Right. This is just SAS. I have a little article out of it, but you can just kind of like name it and then just like include breakpoint and then say the name so that way you don't have to repeat yourself.
It's a wonderful way of dealing with media queries. That's great. Yeah. I love the Goldilocks. That's great. That's really what you're going for. It's just sort of general idea of sizes, right? So that makes a lot of sense. It's good.
We have one here from Rob D. Yeah, he can.
Oh, I was going to say, can I propose that like your next one, even larger than Papa Bear, is like Bear with Laser?
Absolutely. Sasquatch.
All right. Sasquatch. Oh man.
This is to Dan's earlier kind of sentiment about the one I was referencing earlier by Rob D. I've been a web designer developer until about 2004 when I changed careers. Now that new career is getting downsized out of existence. I'd like to go back to web development, but of course I'm finding myself way behind in new technologies like Rails. When did Ruby get so popular? And Node.js, which I don't understand at all. How does someone who's been out of the web dev game for a few years catch up? That's kind of the deal kind of is like things are moving fast. He's literally been out of the game for a while. So,
yeah.
What are you going to do, Rob?
I don't necessarily understand Node.js either. So I don't know if that's a comfort or not, but I wonder what he went into after, you know, sort of he was in web development and left and then came back. But anyway, that aside,
I'm just going to say he was a male model. Let's Rob for the last 8 years has been in male modeling.
Were you curious? Because if it was something kind of related to design or something, that you know what he learned there might be new.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. That would be interesting to know. Male model is that would be interesting. I've been considering that one myself. That's why. How to catch up? I mean, that's the thing. I think it is overwhelming. And you know, he mentioned Rails and Node.js, and so maybe he's coming this at, from a back more of a back end standpoint. But this is a tough one.
Yeah, we have this
catch kind of, up, you know?
We have this just build websites kind of mantra here on there to just kind of just dig in, you know, like Chuck Close kind of said, just get into the process, you know. I mean, if you literally can't make a website anymore, you're so out of date, you might have to go back to some Hello World kind of stuff. But you know, but you have a foundation, so you'll move quickly beyond Hello World into new stuff.
Exactly. I would say, you know, don't worry about doing things the right or wrong way. Because one thing I've always learned is that there's, you know, 4,000 ways to do one thing on the web. And that's kind of one of the reasons why I love it so much is that there's so much. It's a giant mess, really, when you come down to it. It's a giant, absolute cluster F. But that's what's sort of beautiful about it too. So I think I'm with you. Like, just dig in and view source and like just start making things because it'll come along. And all those little problems that you have to solve along the way, you know, that'll be solved for the next project and so on. So
heck yeah.
Yeah.
Best of luck, Rob D.
Yeah, definitely.
This next one is interesting because it's because Dan has a bit of history and client work. Maybe he still dabbles in it from time to time. This is by H. McKay. And he just have never – this is a good one. How do you charge your clients for the fonts that you buy for a project? Do you set them up – like let's say if we're talking about web fonts, which we may not, like – you know, print fonts apply here too. Would you set them up on Typekit and then just let them pay for that and then you can log in and use it? Or what if you need a print font, you know, like would you just throw that on the bill or would you consider that cost of doing business kind of thing?
I would have the client buy the font so that they own the license. You know, especially if it's for like a branding thing or something they're going to want to use later on, they're going to want to have that license. And then for Typekit stuff, I'd have them set up a Typekit account and that they control that because a lot of times you don't want to be managing that yourself. I think
Should the relationship go sour, then you own it and you
exactly.
That's what I recommend. Ties, not buying domain names either, you know, like just let them own there. It's such an important part of their business.
Exactly. Yes, definitely. Let them pay for as much as possible. Maybe even lunch. You know.
Maybe you could. It just seemed funny because you're like, I really want to buy Idlewild by Hoffler, Farron, Jones or whatever. It looks great, right? And you can just look up Idlewild as a tag on Dribbble and see the cool stuff people are doing with it. But, like, what if you just want it because you want it, you know? And would you be like, oh, hey, I bought this. I use this in your project company. Give me the $250 or whatever. I don't know. That seems like a little weird. And you'd be like, hey, use something else then, Captain.
I see. That's a good point. I mean, if you haven't settled on the final type, you know, how do you charge for that? I mean, that's a good question. I think I would only charge for the whatever's used in as the final. And then, you know, the cost of doing business is part of you know, buying fonts and trying them out and stuff.
Maybe
that's just me. I don't know. I mean, other people might have different ways of handling it, but
food for thought there, Mr. McKay.
Yeah, absolutely.
One of our sponsors this week is Harvest. So Harvest is this web app for kind of, you know, start the timer, stop the timer, time tracking so that you know, speaking of charging your clients, how much to charge them and fairly. I like some of the, you know, they have apps, you know, that run on your computer too to do this. So it's not like you always have to have a tab open in your browser, you know, which is fine, but I think it's nicer. You know, your workflow isn't always on the web. It just can be anywhere, you know. Some people like to even close their web browser when they're working on something to get rid of distraction. So Harvest has apps for that, which is kind of cool. I kind of like the one where it like will stop tracking if you go idle. So you can't like screw up and charge, you know, what you take a 2-hour lunch or whatever. And they can invoice too. So when you're done, with a project, you can scoot out a little invoice form on Harvest. So it's getharvest.com. You can use the coupon code SHOPTALK to get 50% off your first month. And it's just a nice app. They have some good designers working for them. It's a pleasure to use. So thanks for sponsoring the show, Harvest.
Yes. Thank you, Harvest.
Love it. I love Harvest very, very, very much. All right. Okay. I murdered it last week, so I'm not going to do it again. All right. So next we'll get back into questions, but we got a question from John Stube.
Stevie,
I met John I stumble on his last name every time I see it, but, hey, it's an audio question.
Yeah.
We're good here. So it's an audio question. Our favorite kind of question here at the Shop Talk Show. Here we go.
Hey, Chris and Dave. I love the show. This is John from Arizona. Just a quick question for Dan about kind of back-end build of Dribbble, if he would go into detail, not at all. But basically, just, you know, what framework did you use? What language did you use? Was it, you know, Ruby and Rails? Or was it some flavor of PHP? Or what exactly did you kind of go through when you were building that?
Okay. What is
powering? Or is it a secret? It could be a secret.
Yeah.
Trade secrets.
It's
tell us trade secrets.
Have you guys heard of Front Page?
Yeah.
That's actually it's the dirty little secret. No. No, he was right. It's a Ruby on Rails application. And written entirely by Dribbble co-founder Rich Thornett, the wonder mastermind behind all the technology behind Dribbble. It's Ruby on Rails and Postgres database.
Really? That's fantastic.
Yeah. Yep. And I don't know. What else could I say about it? Maybe you guys can help me with this.
I don't know. So when you work on like the views and stuff, right?
Exactly. Yes.
So you open up app views, shots, index.html.erb.
Exactly.
Correct. Heck yeah, dude. Living
exactly.
Yeah.
So I live in the ERB files and occasionally break other things that I'm not supposed to do.
Totally.
That Rich will fix. I'm comfortable with Rails and from a front end standpoint, you know, I'm comfortable there. We did a site called Corked several years ago, a wine community site, and that was in
Rails too.
Yeah, that was Rails and maybe the earlier days of Rails, but
not your first rodeo.
That's right. It was a while ago. Rails is great. I love you know, any of the little teeny Ruby bits that I have to do that Rich has shown me, which are very few, but they all seem to make sense. I mean, I've dabbled in PHP, for instance, and Perl back in the day, but Ruby from a non-programmer standpoint, Ruby seems very, very clean and elegant and and the view, I mean, you don't have to know any of it, obviously, to work in the view stuff if you don't want to, but it's good. It works. It works well.
Heck yeah. And then we saw, just because I use Twitter, there was some, just yesterday, I think, you're having a little, some Media Temple issues, huh? So you must be hosted there.
Yeah, we're on, we've been on Media Temple the whole time, which they've been fantastic. Actually, it was yesterday's problem wasn't a Media Temple issue. It was someone writing sort of accidentally malicious code that
really
was making thousands of requests per minute or something.
Oh, it was an API thing.
API potentially or just making requests HTTP requests. It was a mistake. So we were just getting hammered. That's so Temple was very helpful in getting letting us.
Yeah, it's nice when you go with them because it's kind of like you got a server guy for free, kind of. I mean, you pay for the hosting and whatever, but you got these people on staff that like watch Twitter and they're all over it. It's great.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they knew we were having problems from Twitter, so that's pretty cool. I mean, they're on top of that stuff. And great. We're really happy with those guys.
Cool. All right. So that was a little insight into the back end there for John Stevie there. Mike Rohr asks, wants to know about your humble beginnings of Dribbble. Where did you get the idea for Dribbble?
Yeah. So it started like about 3 years ago, I guess. A couple different things to sort of inspire this, and one of the things was, you know, going to conferences and seeing friends and colleagues actually around the early days of Twitter, the first question I'd always ask and you would always get asked is, what are you working on? What are you up to? I was kind of fascinated by that, like, you know, I wish I could look over the shoulder of my friends just to see what they were doing, even if it was just, you know, not a full picture or completed thing, but just, I was interested in what they were doing, no matter what it was. And so that was part of the inspiration. And then, you know, along this time, Twitter was emerging, and I think the idea of, you know, consuming things quickly based on a simple timeline was, was cool, and it would fit this sort of model of a constraint on the image, which I don't know if you guys remember Cameron Mall's, I think he called it screen grab confab. And so that was an inspiration too, in terms of the constraint on the image, like not showing a whole picture, but just a snippet of what you're doing. And that, you know, like Twitter's 140 characters, this constraint is kind of interesting, and it makes it easy to digest little pieces quickly. So you can, you know, follow a lot of people, just get a really quick sense of their style or what they're doing or what they're up to or what project they're working on. And so that was all those different things kind of came together into the idea. And, you know, Rich was working. I had a small office for Simplebit, and Rich was working there a couple of days a week, just telecommuting for his day job. And when we started talking about this idea, we were bouncing things back and forth, and you know, finally I said, well, let's build this, you know, as a side project. Let's put it together. And so that's how it started. And we were building it for a long time, and it was a slow going thing, because we were both working on other things full time at the same time as starting it. And so it didn't start as a typical startup where we're like, okay, here's our business plan, here's what we're going to do, now we need money and funding and all that. It's just sort of, we just started building it, and then it has evolved ever since. It's been a slow road, but it's been a blast, and really fortunate to, I think we feel really fortunate that the community has been so solid and it's been so, so great in sharing what they're doing. And mm-hmm. It's been awesome. So thank you, Dribblers. Including you guys.
Yeah, we dribble stuff sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely.
I dribble today. yeah, okay. This is a, Dave, I think you have an audio one for this. Somebody emailed it to you outside of our normal.
Yeah, I do. Normal channel. This is a friend of mine, but he has a question for you, Dan. Here we go.
Hey, Shop Talk Show. Yeah. This is Drew Yaton. This question is for Dan Cederholm. I was wondering if you're going to change the 400 by 300 pixel limit on Dribble to allow for retina resolution shots. Thanks, guys. Love the show.
Big question.
That sounded good. Just audio quality.
I know. He was, what was his name again? He was great, man. Wow.
Drew Yaton. He used to work at
Drew
Yaton.
Okay. So, yeah. Oh, cool. Awesome.
He's talented.
Yeah. And a really good microphone.
Yeah. He's an engineer.
That makes sense. really good question. Timely question. We've been getting this question, you know, on Twitter and stuff, and I wouldn't say we're dragging our feet, but you know, that's an interesting one. We're in an interesting position because we have this pixel constraint on an image, right? And the idea of a pixel is changing in a way, in terms of now it's really a reference pixel, or eventually when things are, maybe all screens are high definition, it'll be sort of reference pixels will be the dimensions of things, but the actual, you know, picture assets will be much larger. So it's a tough one for us. You know, one of the things I sort of got annoyed initially about why these people are like, why isn't it retina? Everything looks crappy on Dribble, you know? And, that is the case for any website right now, pretty much, that's non-retina, optimized, right? I don't know if you guys have the new Mac?
I ordered one. I haven't gotten it yet.
I just did too. You know, so everything looks blurry, right? Unless someone's optimized it for.
I have seen that, and even on the iPad 3, once in a while, you go to a site and you'll be like, "Dang, that icon looks garbage."
Exactly. So, but at the same, so our one excuse is like, "Well, you know, geez, this is just starting. Like, give us some time to figure this out, right?"
Yeah,
everybody's trying to figure this out. Like, there's no great solution. Smart people are building like workarounds for now. You know, Scott Gell comes to mind if you follow his stuff, because he's kind of a genius around this stuff, in terms of, you know, regular assets versus two times assets. But so there's the, all right, give us some time, sort of response to figure it out. But then there's also, you know, people on Dribbble, which is probably why it's a unique situation, designing Retina stuff, right? So, so that makes it even more crucial for us to get it right, because they're sharing, you know, if you share a Retina shot at 400 by 300, you're not really seeing much of it. So I think one of the ideas that we've been tossing around, and this is sort of, this is not implemented yet or anything, but is to possibly give people the option to say, this is a Retina shot, and
right.
it can be 800 by 600 size wise, but would still
we'll
be
scale it down.
Exactly. It will fit it into 100 by 300 pixel reference pixel area. And that way, if your device supports Retina, then you will get a Retina high definition image there in the same spot that you would get a 400 by 300 image. That's one option for us to do.
Sure, that has the taste of a clean and simple solution.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's maybe the better one. It's the front runner at this point.
You always got to worry about that, like adding a checkbox thing, right?
Yeah, when you're... exactly. Right. So it adds a little bit of messiness to the flow of uploading. So we're sure that's not a final solution or anything that we've actually built out yet, but we're thinking about that. You know, just increasing the shot size doesn't necessarily solve the problem, because we'd have a lot of large images, but we didn't necessarily know whether it's Retina or not. So I think we're going to have to let people specify whether this is a Retina image or not. And that's just that's going to be the nature of web design for a while anyway, right? Having maybe two sets of assets, unfortunately. It's a real pain in the ass, the whole thing, actually.
But that's a temporary solution, because just Retina, what that definition is going to change over time. But just like any solution that just doubles things is short-sighted, right?
Yeah, right. I mean, there could be sort of in-between resolutions, right? There could be something that's not 72. It's like between 72 and whatever. So it's going to be an interesting path, and there's a lot of, it affects just about everything. I mean, it affects, you know, markup, like trying to think about a new, going back to Scott Gell's stuff, like this picture element proposal, and how you serve, you know, you don't want to just serve double size images to everybody, because that's a bandwidth nightmare. And so there needs to be, you know, possibly web technologies that need to revolve around this, more media query support for device pixel densities and all that stuff. So it complicates just about everything.
It really does, and there's just no clear answer, especially, you know, just because your device is Retina ready, does that automatically mean you want to be served double the size assets? You know, what if you're in a low bandwidth environment? That stuff's even less thought about than
absolutely
pictures.
Oh no, that's a whole another can of worms. You know, for a native application, then sure, it's the assets are loaded on the device. You're not pulling it from the web, so that makes sense. But websites, you know, yeah, that's a good point. Do all websites need to be serving double size images to devices that support it? I don't know. I mean, it's an interesting time, man. Really, jeez.
I know. Nobody knows.
No pixels, no problems.
There's got to be some
no problems.
Can you make a shirt of that? That's beautiful. I like that.
That is awesome.
That is pretty damn good. I don't know.
It's good.
No, we'll put it on a shirt.
Please do.
Sell it on
a shop,
the Dribbble
shop
store.
Talk. All right. Yeah, sure. We'll sell it. That'd be great. A shop talk branded shirt.
No pixels, no problems. Here's a dirty, like, here's the one that you can may or may not answer if you don't want.
Okay.
To. Nick Sergent says, what is your conversion rate for turning regular users into pro users?
Okay. Yeah, I don't know if I could share that, but we're extremely happy with it. Let's put it that way.
It's definitely
very high.
100%. Yeah.
It's not like the normal. It's above.
It's above 1%, he's saying.
It's pretty good, and Dan drives a gold-plated Lexus around Salem. So, whatever that means to you.
I'd have 100 more questions to add to that, but I can't do it. But, oh, God, I wonder if I could think of one that's less direct than that. No, I can't. They're all more direct. Next.
All right. Next, this is from Josh Green. He said, "Hi, Dan. I was wondering if you've seen the site dribbleboard.com. It's like a dribble, sort of just pulling shots from the feed. It's an API-based site. But I was wondering if you guys have ever considered changing the site to a more, like, even more responsive layout. Do you think Or do you think such large and popular sites, for example, Facebook's, Twitter, Dribbles of the world, should change at a slower pace and keep their massive user base happy?"
Kind of weird.
It sort of deals with like larger images kind of too. So any thoughts, Dan?
Well, you know, it's an alternate version of this isn't Dan. You said ask Dan and then I started talking, which I need to stop doing that. But it's in like an alternate homepage for Dribbble. Like, how do you feel about people using your API in that way, kind of?
It's a tough question. It looks like we lost Dan, so I'll work on getting him back. And then
I can keep rambling about stuff while you do technical work. Oh, he went offline. Look at it. I wonder if his laptop ran out of battery juices because he's not even on Skype. That's okay.
He's out of juice. Oh, well. Technical difficulties. Welcome here to the world of live radio.
I'll be Dan for a minute. No, hey, what I was going to ask Dan, which we'll ask him when we get him back on here, was about that, like, I find this similar to, like, how Tweetbot just came out for the Mac yesterday, and people are like, this is so crazy, because it's rebuilding exactly a Twitter client, and Twitter was pretty clear about, don't rebuild a Twitter client. We don't want you to use our API in that way. You should use our data to do cool stuff, but don't just rebuild what we're already building. And for some reason, this one got through or whatever. And people are like, is it going to be the last one or whatever? This is a little different because it's just like just kind of a different version of the Dribbble homepage. But it's still kind of interesting in that. And, oh, God, we need to get him back on here because this is going to be a good question, this next one. Is kind of that Rich Thornett was at VallejoCon, that Drew Wilson's little conference thing, and there was a good quote from him down there, and he was talking about APIs, and he's like, don't just make an API to make an API, but make an API to that you have a plan for your business and for your, like a grandiose vision, and then make an API around that kind of vision. Like, don't just make an API and then worry about it later, because we've seen that be a problem. You're having to cut down your API and stuff. So I wonder if Dribbleboard is what Dan and Rich want people doing with their API, or if he's like, God dang, I wish we didn't make that available. Because
it's an interesting APIs are interesting because I've built things on APIs and then services shut down, just different things like, you have, when you're just using the data, you kind of have an optimal circumstance. You can kind of make your dream app or dream version without, any sort of user requirements or anything like that, or business requirements even. So,
hey, Dan's back.
I think we got him back. Let's bring him. Remember that drama question.
Should I do it? Should we just? I'll just ask the question.
Hey guys, I'm back.
Dan? Cool. I imagine there's like a lightning storm, or
yeah, exactly. You know when it's Apple's equivalent of the blue screen of death. Like it just says like you have to restart your computer or whatever.
Oh, that's, no way! Yeah, you got that?
That's what happened. Which hasn't happened in 6 months on this machine. So I apologize. What great timing! Yeah. Perfect time.
You can edit it in post or not.
And I just kept, asking all these interesting questions, knowing that you weren't there. I mean, I was like, I'm just going to keep talking because this is so good. So one of the last things. The last thing that I brought up was kind of Dribbble API related, because I heard that at VallejoCon, Rich was there, right? And he was talking about stuff.
Yep.
And somebody quoted him on a blog post, and everyone, I was like, this is a great quote. And it was about, this isn't an exact quote. It's me putting words in his mouth. But he's like, have a plan for your business or whatever. Have a, you know, and then don't just make an API to make an API, but make an API based on your business goals or whatever. Have it serve that grander vision. So I wonder if that's like in retrospect kind of quote, like I wish we would have done things differently in our API, or if it's kind of like we did the right thing. And
that's actually a great question. And I think Rich talked about it in his talk, essentially. Yeah, that's a retrospect thing. I mean, right now we only have a read-only API, and when we initially launched it, though, I guess we had high hopes for people doing interesting things with it, and some people have, but most people are sort of trying to recreate the Dribbble experience, right? At the time that we launched the API, we were completely dependent on advertising alone, right? So, that's a little scary to sort of give up your, this kind of stuff is this kind of stuff that we don't like to worry about, but unfortunately we had to, page views, like suddenly if everybody's using this Mac app, then suddenly we have no advertising revenue and can't even support the site that people are using. So, I think that's important. On the other end, because we're moving sort of slow, intentionally in a way, with features, we would get some people like, hey, I'm going to build this thing. And it would be like, something we're planning on building into the site. And so that's a little awkward too, because you have to be like, well, look, please don't do that, because this is going to be, this could be potentially a big revenue stream for us that would allow us to keep this company going. And if you build that off the API, then that's going to really hurt us. And I think, you see this with other companies too. I mean, Twitter, for example, like I never use the Twitter website. I don't know about you guys, but it's completely through a third party app. So, they're trying to figure out how to make money that way. Right. What do you do? Insert stuff into streams, or, there's a lot to figure out. And I think Rich's point in the presentation was that, like, just, good idea to think that stuff through before you even put out an API at all. I think, 5 years ago, everyone was like, just put an API out and you got to have an API or you'll die, and just do it. And everything's free and awesome. And that's good if maybe if you're funded with a lot of money and don't have to worry about a business plan. You know what I mean? Like, just get as many users as you can using your stuff, seeing your stuff. And that's one approach, I suppose. But for us, as a bootstrap two-person thing, like, it just doesn't work. It's a good tip to just think it through. Think what pieces do you want people using? What portions of your data that you want people using for free? And what kinds of things do you want them to be building on top of it? Things that complement Dribbble are fantastic. And there's some good things out there that people have done. And also just getting, we need the ability to have people be able to put their own shots, for instance, on their blog and stuff like that. So API is important for all that stuff. But it can be scary if you yourself are still working out your business goals while you have an API just sitting there. It could be a little frightening. But
yeah, it's okay. It's a new level of maturity. I feel like earlier days, everybody's just like, API, just throw it in there. It's easy. Rails makes it easy. Just do it. Just put it in there. And Oh, crap.
You got people building things
that
you're going to be doing later. And it's tricky. It's tricky.
I feel like, it's this secret to success and also this, like, total bane because, you're locked you know, you have to now support this new API product so people don't get so upset.
Yes.
Just from the app development standpoint. So.
Yeah, no, there's that whole side of it too. You're right. Absolutely. And, you know, again, with a small team, that's hard. You know, we don't have a person dedicated to the API, for instance. It's Rich. we're he's trying to do, you know, a dozen other things or more. You know, as we grow, I think that's something we want to come back to for sure and improve that.
Mm-hmm.
And now we have some more, you know, advertising isn't our only way of sustaining the business. So we have a little bit more leeway there and sort of have the opportunity to rethink what the API is and what it'll do in the future.
Cool.
Good. Yeah.
Very cool.
Eugene Burke asked, with Dribbble being has been quite the following, any chance of a spin-off conference or a more grandiose meetup sort of thing in the future?
Oh, good. Oh, that's a great question. Yeah, we've always tossed around that idea, to be honest. It was something that kind of we were both excited about. And I can't say for sure, but it's definitely something we want to do. You know, either a sort of – I mean, a conference would be neat. Just imagine getting, like, you know, some of the talent from Dribbble in a room talking about what they do and their process, for instance. That's just one idea. But at the same time, there's, you know, all these meetups are happening, like, all over the place, and that's been incredible. They're happening all over the world, and I think that's something that we've had like one here in Boston, so it's kind of embarrassing actually. But we just moved us into some new office space. It's has enough space to probably host like some small meetups. So that's something that we're toying with too. I can't guarantee, you know, anything, but that would be it's definitely something we're interested in doing. So. Stay tuned. Yeah.
And I'll say firsthand, the Austin Dribbble meetup at South by Southwest was pretty grandiose. We had an ice sculpture.
Yeah, that's right.
You missed it. I'm sorry.
Incredible.
That was a one-off? I thought you did that regularly. No?
We do it. We do the Dribbble meetup every, gosh, I don't know, like 2 months-ish. Here in Austin, it's pretty awesome.
Though you guys, from the outside, it looks like you guys have an amazing turnout every time, which is great. It's fantastic. I mean, there's a lot of Austin dribblers. There's a lot of great talent in general down there. So, and hat tip to Greg Story for the ice sculpture idea. I think that was his. I don't know how he figured that out.
It was marvelous.
Yeah, I saw pictures and it was pretty cool.
here's some news, folks. In Hawaii, December 2nd through 4th is a conference called In Control Conf by Environments for Humans. So it's kind of going to be all kinds of things, web design, really good conferences. A lot of times they happen in Orlando, and they're going to keep doing the one in Orlando. But now they're adding on one, a new one in Hawaii, December 2nd through 4th, incontrolconf.com. Hugely awesome lineup. It's going to be fun. I'm going to be at it. Dave's going to be at it. And then it runs back to back with another conference that's more focused just on CSS, CSSDevConf.com, just an all-day CSSer. And it's a good one to bring up because I'm doing the opening keynote for it, so you can see me there. I'll have a brand new thing I'm going to be talking about. And the closing keynote, the proper keynote, is going to be done by Mr. Dan Cederholm himself. So we'll all be in Hawaii.
Yay. Well, I'll be – I'm excited about this one. This is
Man.
I've
never been
to Hawaii.
Oh, you haven't either?
Neither have I. Nice. No. Dave, have you been there?
I have not, so I'm really excited. I promised, I will promise in the future, this is kind of back to the future-ish, but may or may not see Chris Coyer and I in coconut bras. I'm just saying this could be a thing in the future.
Very likely.
That's, That sounds out of control to me.
Not yeah, it sounds it sounds a little bit like
dang.
Wow.
Yeah, that's going to be fun. So check out both of those events. They're both done by environmentsforhumans.com. So CSSDevConf.com and InControlConf.com. I want to see some of you guys in Hawaii. We can really make a family vacation out of it and just sneak away for a day or two to come to some of these nerd events.
Absolutely. I'm planning on bringing my family, I think, this time. So
yeah, there you go. Yeah. Lovely, lovely. Fun. Let's try and wrap this up pretty soon, but let's do, you know, that was our last. Let's do one or two more if we can. What do you say?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whatever you guys say.
Okay.
So next up we have an audio question from Andrew Dilger.
Hey, guys. Love the show. This question is kind of for Chris, but is open to anyone. I'm an amateur front-end web developer. Chris, you're always saying, just build websites, just build websites, and just build websites. But you don't really go into what the next step is. I've designed a couple of template-type sites, which I could upload to my public Dropbox, but I really want some sort of forum to get feedback on these sites that I've designed. Does anything like that exist? Thanks.
Is that a softball or what? Does any site exist, maybe, for feedback on designs? There is one. It has three B's in it, right in the middle. But it does bring up an interesting thing, though. Is that because we've talked about this before? Actually, I should have mentioned this. Really, we had the Raji on recently, who we ended up talking about Dribbble a bunch.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. I haven't listened to that episode yet, but I'm looking forward to it.
It's good because we talk about Dribbble, so you'll be all ears burning.
Yeah. Awesome
situation.
Awesome.
And one of them totally. He mentioned, he's like, I have some advice for you, Chris. Like, whenever there's, like, hot drama regarding Dribbble, Dan never gets involved. He's, like, hands off on the drama, which I thought was interesting. Other drama you can participate in, but Dribbble-related drama. Is that a conscious?
Yeah, I mean, to a certain extent. There's actually a lot of drama that's not public that has to be dealt with. So we're actually dealing with it all the time anyway, but there is a fair amount of drama surrounding, you know, what's Dribbble for and what are you using?
Exactly.
You know?
People want to define it so much, right?
Yeah. And I don't, you know, I think we've taken the approach of, you know, watching how people use it and on the whole and sort of reacting to that. And building features based around, you know, how people use it. And,
right. Not one individual shot that has some radical idea of how it should change, but the usage.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, so, you know, and the truth is it's used differently by different people and your experience on it can change drastically depending on who you're following. For instance, there's a fair amount that's public. I mean, you've got the popular streams and the everyone streams, but if you take that out of the equation, you know, Dribbble is who you follow and how those people use it. And there's, you know, I think that there's a misconception that trends on Dribbble are sort of site-wide, right? There's such a large variety depending on who you follow on Dribbble. I mean, you could relate this to Twitter easily too, right? I mean, no one looks at every tweet posted. Everyone follows the people they want to follow, and you know, it's different depending on that. And from an outsider's perspective, you could say, well, Twitter is just about Justin Bieber, so I'm not going to get involved.
Right.
But you know, it depends. It depends on how you use it and how other people use it. And I think we've tried to go that route in terms of, you know, not drawing a line in the sand, saying this is how you should use it, and coming up with rules and stuff. There are certain rules, obviously. I mean, not really rules, but sort of guidelines as to how to get the most out of it, right?
So if Andrew Dilger here wanted to get some feedback on a design he's working on, you could use it for that, right?
Oh yeah, sure, absolutely. You know, and is it only a feedback mechanism? No, but does it happen? Yes. I mean, I've gotten great feedback, and I know other people have gotten great feedback on things. So absolutely. Yeah, I think he should check out Dribble.
Sure. And so, I mean, you know, it has the, you can always attach a full size thing. So if you're worried that your little your small design won't translate into a small thing, I'll just attach a larger shot. Exactly. There's other things too. There's the forest is similar, but that's an invite only thing. But it does have bigger shots on there, and it's kind of more. Their community guidelines are more specific about please give me feedback. That's what this thing is for, kind of deal. Mm-hmm. There's things like conceptfeedback.com, which is the whole point of that web app is posting some things there and then asking about specific parts of the design that you want people to comment on. So it's very specifically for that. Feedback Army is another site that's kind of like post it and we'll get a bunch of randoms to answer questions for you through. I think it works through Amazon Mechanical Turk somehow. Yeah, there's plenty of, you know, if you just want feedback and just even Twitter and just do it more organically or ask your friends or whatever too. There's a million ways to get feedback, but Dribble is certainly one of them. It's kind of funny the definition thing, because I'm kind of like, I don't know. So here's an example. I was trying to get some people to design some little parts of CSS Tricks for me, some cool headers and stuff as I launch on a redesign. And I was like, I'm going to – and Dribble is – it's not even kind of for hiring. It's for hiring if you want it to be. If people mark their profile as hire, you can click a button. You get a form that pops up and you can write them a message that says, hey, I like your style, yo. Yeah, it's great. Absolutely. I got the two or three people I did it to. One of them's like, yeah, it's too small of a job for me. I was like, cool, fine. The other two were like, heck yeah, I'm on board. So I'm two for three for hiring people.
Through Dribble. That's fantastic. Yeah. That's great. Excellent news.
Yeah. So, but that's, you know, that's specific. So if you use Dribble only for in-progress work, you might limit your how willing people are to click that hire button. Or, you know what I mean? Like,
yes. That's true. So. That's true. Depending on how you use it, that's a good point.
Yeah, but you know, maybe you don't care. You know?
I don't know. I think that, you know, that's one of the things we need to think about going forward too. In terms of, you know, are there certain pieces of work that you upload that are more polished that you want people to see that are hiring you, and those could be still work in progress, but. And then there's other stuff that you just want to upload either for fun or you're rebounding somebody or whatever, and maybe those are sort of – should be separate. I'm not sure. You know,
or maybe things not. That
is working out. Or maybe not. Yeah. I don't know. But it's true. That's – you just define another way that people use Dribble, and a lot of people use Dribble is to get work, and that's been fantastic and just a real quick, easy way to find really good talent. Not to put my marketing hat on, but I guess I just did.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was good. That Andrew, plenty of hopefully some links there for you to check out. You know, and I do stand by just build websites, you know, and if feedback is the only missing part, there's, you know, that's the easiest thing to get. If you're worried about what Node.js is, I don't know, I can't answer you. No, I could, but we're not going to go there. Do you want to read this last one, Dave, or...
Sure. Yeah. So this one's from
the same
Mike.
Question, isn't it? Sorry.
Yeah, it's kind of the same question. We'll cover. Let's cover it in another show. We'll just reduce redundancy here, and we'll hit it up in another show. It's a good question, but does that sound good?
Yeah, that sounds great.
So I guess Dan, thanks so much for coming on the show. How can people, you know, follow you on Twitters, give you money, and do all that stuff.
Yeah. So, I'm on, Twitter as SimpleBits, and also on Dribble as SimpleBits, and those are good places to follow me. SimpleBits.com is my, not often updated blog. but that has some other info on it as well about books and things. So that's a good place to go too. Yeah, those are the main channels, I'd say.
Cool.
And thanks for having me, guys. This is awesome. You guys do a good job.
Thank you, guys. You do a good job. I love things.
That sounded terrible. I didn't mean it to sound like that.
I just like saying fantastic. That. It's kind of like turning into a little meme on the Twitter, like when people don't do a good job. You didn't do a good job today. I really love it.
It's passive aggressive, but
yeah. All right. Well, thanks for being on again, Dave. Do you have your spiel about?
Yeah. So thanks everyone for coming out in the chat room and listening. We really appreciate that. As always, subscribe, rate us in iTunes. If you're not using iTunes, we totally understand. You can find a RSS link at the bottom of the page. But rate us up, tell your friends, follow Shop Talk Show on Twitter. That would be glorious. And thanks again, Dan. It was so legendary having you on.
Oh man. Thanks. Thanks. Thank you guys. It's really fun.
Until next time,
Chris, you got anything?
ShopTalkShow.com.